Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good evening and welcome to Minute Maid Park in Houston on field level, just outside of the third base coach's box in front of the Washington Nationals visiting dugout. Grant and Danny with you on 106.7 The Fan. Tonight's pregame show brought to you by Paul Henry's Windows. PVI Office Furniture, fast, excellent, affordable business grows with PVI, our presenting sponsors tonight. What a ballpark, what a scene. Already thousands of orange-wearing Astros fans have made their way into the ballpark. There are a handful of Nats fans over top of the visiting dugout who have made the flight from the nation's capital. It's taken 115 World Series, Danny, and for the first time, the Nats will be playing in one in the 15th year of their existence.
It's finally hit me. This is very real. This is a thing that's happening. I'm aware of the information, obviously. I understand it. The same way when you and I were in Vegas watching the Washington Capitals in the Stanley Cup Finals, it wasn't real until we were there, until they dropped a puck. This is all happening. I'm watching the Nationals take batting practice on the field right now. Adam Eaton is in the cage, roping line drives. Anthony Rendon just sprayed balls all over the yard. I'm watching the fans fill up. The buzz in this place is electric. It is a place that I think knows the drill by now, GP, talking about the Astros fans. The energy in this stadium, the energy in this city is high. They get it. They understand how good their Astros are. It's going to be super, super loud in here, I'd imagine.
It's a tall order for the Nationals, who are the biggest underdogs in a World Series in 12 years. You got to go back to 07 to find the last time Vegas stacked the deck taller against any team than they are against Washington. One of the reasons the Astros have a home field advantage. First two games here in Raucous Houston, where the roof is closed on a beautiful 70 or so degree day in Texas. But 25 of the previous 33 teams who have had home field advantage to start a World Series have gone on to win the series. The exceptions in 92, Toronto over Atlanta. In 99, New York over Atlanta. In 03 with the Marlins. 08 with the Phillies. 06 with the Cardinals. And most recently, in 2016 and 17, when the Cubs beat the Indians and the Astros beat the Angels. But by and large, for going on three decades now, if you have home field, it really does carry you in this World Series round. Let's talk for a second about the ballpark, because I think just bringing it to life for our listeners back home right now could be neat. This is one of the more unique facilities in the sport. They used to have that terribly awkward hill out in center field, 409 feet from home plate. They no longer do. They've gotten rid of it. But what you do have is a very tall outfield wall and left, 14 feet up. The Crawford boxes are what they're called, basically bleacher seats over top of that. But left center is really, really strange. It's almost like huge garage doors. They actually are. They bring equipment out from them. And there are big brick columns. The ball has to go almost 20 feet in the air over those brick columns, over these garage doors, or else it's not a home run. And if that doesn't happen, then you're playing quirky, weird bounces off of columns that jet out. It's one of the strangest outfields that exist. In right field, where there's extremely short, almost Yankee Stadium-like porch, you deal with foul territory that's about 2 feet from the actual foul line. So if you're Adam Eaton running over to catch a ball on the chalk, you could be interfered with. At some point in most of the big series played here, the crowd becomes a story. It happened in the ALCS I covered here with Mookie Betts and the Red Sox last year. I would not be surprised if it happened again.
Absolutely. They are right on top of you, especially down the right field line, as you very appropriately touched on. I want to go back to left field, though, for a moment. You touched on those garage doors out there in kind of left center, right? Now, in straightaway left field almost, as those boxes with the 20-foot-high wall jut out, it's kind of away from where the true left field should be, and it kind of makes for that quirky, kind of outcropping. The strangest part about it is there's a space, if you're in the broadcast booth, which we were hanging out with Charlie and Dave a few minutes ago, where you lose sight of a player or a ball, and it's almost a right angle. There's a shadow kind of behind sort of that where that jutting out in left field is. You'll see it when you see it on TV tonight. So there was a play in Nats history not that long ago when Roger Bernardino went behind that wall to make a catch that ended up winning a game for this Nationals club. And it'll come into play. Again, these nooks and crannies and odd angles are going to be a challenge for these Nationals outfielders to deal with here this evening. But the other factor that I think that is massive is the short porch in straightaway right field. That's going to be something that comes into play, not only with the fans, but in terms of, you know, a hitter just, you know, getting behind one a little bit and hitting one just over that wall for a massive moment. It counts the same as if you hit it 500 feet. That, to me, is going to be one of the stories here of the game and of this series, really, as we kind of go forward. So, ultimately, as this pitcher's duel and these sort of huge moments sort of manifest themselves throughout this series, it's going to be decided by some little things.
Joined by Brian Dozier as he gets ready to hit in the cage, getting ready for World Series Game 1. I remember talking to you in spring training, Brian. You said, I signed with the Nationals. I said, yeah, but you had a two-year offer. You said, yeah, but this team can win a World Series. Here you are, getting ready to start. Everything seems like it's playing out for you.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind of a season. An awesome one, a fun team, great character on this ball club. That's what drove me here. And then you look up 8 months later and we're got a chance to win a ring. So I know what it feels like to go away from a World Series and come all this way and not win one. So I just want to win one.
How do you balance it, right? You know what got you here was some of that chemistry and how much fun you guys are having versus these enormous amount of like pudgy idiots like me on the field asking you questions, right? You know it's a big deal, but you also know how you guys got here. How do you balance that?
We had a lot of veterans on the team that's been there, done that, a handful of guys that's played in these types of games, and guys that's been around. We're the oldest team in baseball. I think that says a lot to dealing with the guys like you, you said, per se. But
you left out the word pudgy, what you're saying.
Yeah, you know what? You know, nowadays you can't really say that because
We look like you when we dance to Calma shirtless. A lot of muscles.
I would agree with that. Let's go ahead and just do it now.
Yeah, let's just start.
But no, it's been fun, and I know there's a lot of stuff that comes with being in the World Series, but you look at our group that we're not really focused on the pudgy guys. We know what it takes to win baseball games between the lines, so we're excited.
Lastly, real quick, I know you got to get to the cage. As far as playing in this game, do you give like a Hoosier speech having been here a year ago where you say, you take everyone out there with the tape measure and you say, still 60 feet, 6 inches? I mean, there aren't that many guys on this team that have played in these games.
Yeah, it's not really a Hoosier speech per se, but it's more along the lines of making sure we have all the bases covered in every single aspect of the game. And I'm not talking about just like the fundamental side and, you know, the everyday kind of stuff, but something that goes beyond that, that adds up to little things within the game of baseball that that you have to be on top of to order to win these games. And I think not a Hoosier speech, but just making sure everybody has their ducks in a row as far as that's concerned.
Brian Dozier. Smells really good. Smells like baby powder.
Oh, yeah, a lot of it. Hey, not up top, though.
Thanks, buddy.
You got it, baby.
He's going to the cage. I wanted to make that awkward for Brian Dozier there at the end. I feel like I successfully did that. He's one of the guys that's really helped this clubhouse, though, Danny. We talked about Anibal Sanchez and what he's meant with a Latin American influence in this clubhouse with Gerardo Parra as well. But you get to Brian Dozier and his Drubal Cabrera and the veterans that they brought in. Pretty neat.
And it speaks to it. He touched on it. The oldest team in baseball. And they are zigging when everybody else zags, right? If you're not on a rookie deal, so to speak, right, where you're pre-arbitration eligible, you're almost not even welcome on a lot of these rosters as they're building with economic efficiency. The Nationals went the other way. They realized there is a soft market right now for veterans that can play and help you. Maybe you don't get, you know, 155 games out of a guy, but 130 at a pretty discount rate. You can get 20 homers and a good second base out of a Brian Dozier. So he's absolutely right. This group all pulling the rope in the same direction really was instrumental in them being able to overcome their arduous start. It's a lot of it self-inflicted, but a lot of it injuries as well. Stay the course, stay in the fight as their hashtag is set all season long, and this group really personifies that.
You're listening to the Paul Henry's Windows pregame show with Grant and Danny, presented by PVI Office Furniture. Fast, excellent, affordable business grows with PVI. We are on the field about 14 minutes after 6 o'clock back home. We are steamrolling toward the first pitch of the first ever World Series in Nationals history. As we continue live at field level, we'll be breaking down what the Nationals have to do to beat the Astros in this World Series. Live in Houston at Minute Maid Ballpark, Grant Paulson, Danny Ruye getting ready for Game 1 of the World Series. The Nationals were 19-31. They had the second worst record in the National League and the fourth worst record in baseball. It was May 24th. You and I waddled down Half Street from our studio because we thought there might be a press conference announcing that Davey Martinez was out of a job. He told everyone that day that they would get healthy and they'd turn their season around. Mike Rizzo grabbed his back. And here we are now on day one of the World Series in Houston. The Astros are getting ready to host the Nationals.
It's incredible to think about where they came from, how they got here, what it took. You and I were talking about this, obviously, on the show that day. And it was basically like they have to do something amazing. They've got to do something remarkable just to get back to relevance. I'm not talking about winning the National League round. I'm not talking about winning the NL East or getting to the wild card or any kind of postseason. Just to get back to relevant baseball in July, in August, in September, where they're not playing, you know, the 40th man in the organization to try to figure out, you know, something for next year, right? It took an incredible effort just to get back into this thing. It took one of the best stretches in, well, certainly the best stretch in this team's history, but one of the best stretches in the National League in recent memory. Their record was right up there with these Astros, with these Dodgers. And it was funny, I'm forgetting the name of the player. I think it was Alex Bregman was asked about this on one of the giant media scrums that took place here kind of leading up to the World Series. And, you know, the Nationals won 93 games. These Astros won, you know, well over 107 games. This is clearly a mismatch, right? The odds makers say this. They're the largest underdogs since the Rockies about 12 years ago, another team that swept through the NLCS on the way to the World Series. This is something you guys are, you know, how do you avoid the upset? And Bregman said, whoa. Have you seen these games? Have you seen this team play? Did you watch what they did to the Dodgers? Did you watch them kick the you-know-what out of the St. Louis Cardinals, a pretty good club in their own right? Did you watch them dominate? Have you seen this starting staff? This is not your run-of-the-mill wildcard team. This is not some weird Giants team with Cody Ross that picked up off of waivers, carrying them to the World Series. This is an excellent baseball team, talking about the Nationals. And if they had a normal, reasonable bullpen for probably the entire season, even with that bad start, they would have won 100 games this year. And then you add in, you know, some of the injuries and things they dealt with and some of their own, you know, sort of adversity, some of it self-inflicted. This is a great team that basically has played 115, 120 games now at as high a level as anybody in the sport. And that's been absolutely massive for this team to have gotten here to this point. Been incredible, the run they've been on, the chemistry, and how well they've gotten along.
A big reason for that chemistry is the man they call the Baby Shark, who joins us right now, Gerardo Parra. And Gerardo, you come over to Washington and things weren't looking great when you got here. How soon after you arrived did you feel like this team was special?
It's the first day. The first day when I saw in the clubhouse and I saw the face, all the talent we have, just only put in my mind, hey, we got a great team, we need to go to the playoffs. And that's how we do it. We're doing my best, and we're here. We're here in the World Series.
You start wearing the colored glasses. You come up to the Baby Shark song. The first time that happened, I think that the ballpark in some ways kind of changed immediately, like loosened everything up. Was there ever a conversation with you where someone said, we want you to loosen up this clubhouse, or did it just naturally happen?
Yes, my heart and God. I think that's the only people talk to me before they do that. But I think that just only want to say thank you to the fans that bring you all the energy, because all you guys, when everybody saw that, all my teammates, we go together, we bring a lot of energy. And that's the more important, you know, just continue like we do it, and we try to do the best right now.
This Houston team is very, very good. You guys are really, really good too. What's the key to this series for you guys to be World Series champions?
Just not think nothing about the other team. Just think overall, just play inning by inning, step by step, and play like we play. We play fun, enjoy the game, and I promise you, we got make a win, and that's it. It's only just the same baseball. We don't want to change nothing because we're here like we played before.
Are you surprised at all by how much the Baby Shark theme has caught on?
I'm surprised, but I'm so glad, so happy, because like I said, the more important is like all the kids enjoy that, and that's the more important for me right now.
Thanks, Gerardo.
Thank you, guys.
Gerardo Parra of the Nationals with us in the dugout as we're on the field here getting ready for game one of the World Series in Houston. We talked about the clubhouse, and he might be the most important member of this Nationals team to completely changing the way this club is perceived around Major League Baseball. Think about the perception for years in the playoffs, and there was reason for it. The Nationals were very tight. You know, they were a team that maybe overthought things, that didn't play loose, that weren't very fancy-free with how they operated. They're the opposite of that now. It doesn't seem like any moment is too big. They haven't looked like at any point that they're gripping the bat too tight, that they're not having fun. Have you ever seen a Nationals team, driving in your car rhetorically, have more fun than this group? Is it a coincidence then that they're the team that has gone further than any Nationals team before this? He's a big reason for that.
Without question, and it's not a coincidence. The Nationals for so many years were run so darn well. I mean, thinking from Mike Rizzo on down, right? Think of the scouting. Think of the mid-90s, the upper 90s win teams that they deployed, right? 98 wins, 95 wins, 94, 96 wins, division winners. They run away with the NL East. That doesn't mean you're put together poorly, but there was a, I don't want to say a complacency to that, Grant, because that's not fair, but it felt at times like they just sort of assumed, right? They just assumed that these Nationals, 98 wins, 96 wins, whatever it was, would throw 25 jerseys out on the field, and that would simply be enough just because they were who they were, right? And you see it finally, the change, that they were not shrinking from the moment. They weren't the shrinking violet. They weren't the team where the moment was too big for them. It was the group that was absolutely 100% capable of overcoming and getting through some of those huge moments, those big hits, whether it was Anthony Rendon hitting homers, whether it was Juan Soto knocking the ball out of the yard, whether it was, you know, obviously Howie Kendrick doing what he did, that grand slam. So many massive moments for this team.
We're joined right now by the president of baseball operations for the Washington Nationals, Mike Rizzo, who's watching BP and giving us a couple of minutes. Mike, thank you, first of all. And second, congratulations and welcome to the World Series, just like I'm sure you envisioned back on May 24th.
Hey, we're glad to be here, man. It's like it's a kind of a surreal experience. You know, I haven't been here for 18 years, so I'm happy to be back.
I was reading a story today in the Washington Post about this idea of the old scouting of the Nationals and the analytics of the Astros. And while I like the juxtaposition, I feel like you guys are, at this point, a lot of both. You scout, but you've got an 8-person R&D development staff as well. Is it fair to say maybe you guys are trying to piece both of those puzzles together?
Well, we are. We are both. Excuse me. We are both. We have been both. We're sneaky techie, and I mean, we're under the radar techies. We've got a great staff of extremely intelligent people that do our analytics. Like I've told you guys in the past, there's not a decision we make on the baseball side that doesn't include and utilize analytics along with our scouts and our evaluators. So we have a good balance, and we like our process. Our process really works for us, and it's a good balance process.
And Mike, you recognize something smart in the market. I think it's now. If you can't rent a car, you can play Major League Baseball, basically, at this point. You got to be 22 or 23 to be on a roster. You guys went the opposite direction and found some great value from some veterans. The oldest club in the sport is usually a negative nomenclature, but here you guys are on the World Series taking advantage of maybe a soft market.
Well, you know, we've got a good core of young players, and we've got players that are right in the smack dab in the middle of their prime, and we've got some older players, and you know, it's a balance that you have to have when you're doing roster construction. Is you know, you have to have guys that can kind of fill in. You have guys you can rely on. There's Davey's done a masterful job of giving them enough playing time to keep them sharp, but not over taxing them to get them hurt. And it's a good balance and a good mix. And it was a balance and a mix of that's taken throughout the year to process. So we're extremely happy with the guys that we got. You know, some good character guys, but they can really play and they have a skill set that fit nicely for us.
Mike, last one for you, but so we can get you to go to the important GM stuff that you actually have to do before this game. There was a time before you got here where you could be driving around in D.C. and you're one of the Nationals and you couldn't hear the station that broadcast their games. There's trailers at RFK and you're just trying to build a fan base. Now we're on the field, 106.7, the Fan is all over this thing, and you guys have a fan base that'll sell out watch parties back home. Have you taken a moment just to reflect on how far this thing has come before this week starts?
No, I haven't, Grant. It's you know, we'll reflect. You know, after we bring the trophy home, we'll reflect on it then. And we're proud. We're proud of where we've come from and where we're at now. And you know, we're young, man. We're just stretching the surface of this stuff. And we're a proud franchise that we feel does it the right way. And we're going to continue to do it the right way. And you know, like I said, we're not just satisfied to be in the World Series. We want to win the World Series, and I'll be disappointed if we don't.
You guys have represented D.C. very well, and the city's behind you. We appreciate the time.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks.
Mike Rizzo, the president of baseball operations with the Nationals, live on field level here in Houston. We are just getting going, and there's a lot more to come, including a detailed breakdown and some analysis on tonight's pitching matchup, which is maybe the best matchup on paper of any of the postseason games to this point. Gerrit Cole, widely considered the best pitcher on the planet right now, and Max Scherzer, who, if not for an injury this year, would have won his third Cy Young Award in 4 years. You're listening to the Paul Henry's Windows pregame show with Grant and Danny, presented by PVI Office Furniture. Fast, excellent, affordable. Business grows with PVI. The Paul Henry's Windows pregame show with Grant and Danny, presented by PVI Office Furniture. Fast, excellent, affordable. Business grows with PVI. We are live in the Nationals dugout at Minute Maid Park in Houston. We thank you so much for making the show part of your evening as you get ready to go either to your watch party in the Navy Yard with the Junkies or wherever it is you'll be enjoying tonight's game. And we are joined right now by the first baseman and the longest tenured player of the Washington Nationals, Ryan Zimmerman. Ryan, 1,700 games in the big leagues, the first World Series game you'll ever partake in. How's this atmosphere feeling in this ballpark?
I mean, what do you think it would be like for the World Series? It's been a fun experience coming here yesterday, obviously working out, and then coming out here, all the media, all the hype. It'll be nice just to play a game, honestly.
How do you guys stay sharp? 7-day layoff is just weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like an extended All-Star break. All-Star break's pretty much, I mean, if you think about it, pretty much 5 days. You know, for us, with the way we use our pitchers, for me personally, I enjoyed having, you know, 3 or 4 days to really just do some treatment, get some stuff done, and then the last 2 days, you kind of ramp it up again. But pretty confident we'll remember how to play baseball when we go out there.
Ideally, Zim, you don't normally have to face Gerrit Cole on the all-time heater right after the All-Star break. When you watch him, how's he doing what he's doing and what makes him so difficult?
Yeah, he's a different pitcher than he was in Pittsburgh. In Pittsburgh, he was throwing more of the two-seamer sinker kind of ball. Now it's the, you know, what everyone's doing now. The top of the zone four-seam with the hard slider down under the zone and then the occasional curveball. Real occasional changeup to a righty, but obviously one of the best pitchers in the game. And if you're going to win the World Series, these are the kind of people you got to beat.
Last one for you. I know you got to jump, man. So many games that aren't the World Series, and then this environment here tonight, how do you maintain that level of calm just to make sure that you guys are playing the way that got you here?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a challenge. I think that's the challenge all through the postseason. Obviously, this is another level. Each round gets to another level, and this is the ultimate level, I guess you could say. But, you know, you just go back, act like you're playing baseball for fun, which we are, and, you know, use your experience from the past and go out there and have fun.
Good luck to you.
Yep, thanks, guys.
Ryan Zimmerman on Grant and Danny. Big thanks to the longest tenured player on this ball club, and we're joined right now by Tom Verducci in the dugout. Tom, of course, one of the great baseball writers in the country, and he's got too nice of a face just to be a writer. So now he's all over your decisions on MLB Network as well, and he'll be on the broadcast in the Nationals dugout working the sideline tonight. Tom, if I was to tell you in late May that this Nationals team would be playing the Astros in Houston for game one of the World Series, you would have said what?
No way. I mean, teams just don't come from that far down just to make the playoffs, never mind to have this run that they've been on, 16-2, to get to the World Series. So it's a credit, I think, to the way Davey Martinez has managed this team that there was never a sense of panic.
What's the path to this Nationals club winning, not only tonight against Gerrit Cole, who's great after a week layoff, good luck with that, but this whole series against the juggernaut Astros team that never had to come back from anything because they were great all year long?
Yeah, this is a tough one tonight. I don't like the idea when teams do have 6 days off like this, especially from an offensive point of view. You can take all the simulated games you want. You just do lose an edge. I've seen it happen too many times. I don't think that's something that plays out throughout the course of this series. I do think it's in play for game number one. I remember the Yankees in 96, the Rockies in 07. It's just hard to get back to square and point, especially against a guy like Gerrit Cole, who's been unbeatable for 5 months. So for me, I think this whole series is going to be competed and determined on two strike counts. These are by far the best two offensive teams with two strike hitting. The Nationals led the National League, Astros led the American League. But the stuff the pitchers are bringing to mound, they're some of the best strikeout pitchers in the game. Nationals try to get strike three more out of the strike zone. Astros try to get strike three in the strike zone. So for me, to looking at it from the Nationals pitching side, it comes down to whether the Houston hitters are disciplined enough not to chase. To chase the slider from Scherzer, the curveball, the changeup from Strasburg. That, to me, is where this game is decided. There's not going to be a lot of hits, but the times when you can even get a walk is going to feel like a rally.
There's a lot of people like me whose minds on baseball and opinions and paradigms on things you've helped to shape with your writing over the years. I don't even want to give you ideas. I just want to ask for some themes. You're a writer looking at this thing. What are some of your favorite stories? What are the things that make this such a unique matchup?
Well, so you have to start with the starting pitching. That's the obvious one. You know, 5 of the top 10 strikeout pitchers in baseball are in this series. We have never seen that in a World Series. Now, maybe we get some runs scored. I would be personally very surprised. We do see a lot of runs. The pitching just really is that good. You can throw out the third time around thing with the analytics. You know, these guys pitch out of their own jams. It's hard for either manager to take their starters out, even when they're in trouble in the sixth inning. That's going to be fun for me to watch. And to me, it's going to revolve around the big stars offensively. To me, Altuve on the Astros and both Rendon and Soto on the Nationals. The game is going to come around to them. And I like the fact that, for me, Rendon and Soto back-to-back are a nightmare for the other manager. I think you either have to walk Rendon or you better have two separate pitchers to get them out late in a game. And Astros are not really that equipped or that used to doing something like that. They're just so hard to work through back-to-back, especially with guys on base.
Bigger picture here, where do you think the Nationals have a decided advantage in this series, if there is one, and where they are most disadvantageous?
Well, I think their two-strike approach and two-out approach this year has been far better than Houston's. Now, Houston's, you know, they're capable of grinding out at bats with the best of them. We haven't really seen those quality bats from Houston, not as many as you typically would see from them. So right now, just looking at lineups, I would say that the Nationals can grind out the starting pitchers, maybe not beat starting pitchers, but grind them out a little bit more than the Astros can. I always say in games like this, when you're facing great pitching, count the foul balls. Every foul ball is a little victory because that's another pitch that takes away from that starter, gets them out maybe one inning, one out even earlier. And to me, I think the Nationals can win that little game over the Astros.
Tommy, you're going to have fun in this dugout, so we appreciate the time.
Yeah, just don't ask me to dance. That's actually in my contract. I don't sing and I don't dance, but I will take note of it.
Appreciate you.
Got it. Thanks.
The great Tom Verducci with us. Read his work in SI. Watch him on MLB Network and tonight on Fox Sports. We're live at Minute Maid Park. I'll tell you what, I don't think there's a local television station that is not here. I'm just walking down the way and I see Channel 4, Channel 5, Channel 7, Channel 6. Everybody is out for this event.
It is packed. It is incredible. It is crazy. And you're 100% right. So we've got one more segment here down in the field, at least until they kick us off. We will determine that. It's the Paul Henry's Windows pregame show on 106.7 The Fan.
On the field at Minute Maid Park, right in front of the Nationals' third base dugout, where, by the way, there is a nice contingent of Nats fans gathering. People who made the trip in our hotel eating breakfast today. There were a few caps and Nats jerseys and t-shirts right at the dugout. People very excited for this first ever trip to the World Series, and they wanted to be part of Game 1.
Rightfully so. It's not something that happens very often. I mean, it hasn't happened in D.C. since the 30s. I mean, it's not something that you just sort of say, oh, yeah, every once in a while we'll do this. You know, maybe one day it'll become routine. Maybe at one point in the not-too-distant future it'll be something that happens all the time for this franchise. But you never forget your first, and this is the first for this Nationals franchise as they have been back in Washington, D.C., slowly building this thing, went through a lot of pain, the Nationals era and some of the incredible losses and indignities and some of the galling moments that, you know, made it harder and harder to be a fan. I mean, it wasn't that much fun at times, you know, and there was a group of diehard baseball fans that wouldn't quit, that, you know, stuck with it, went to RFK a million times, and the new ballpark opens, you lose 100 games, and slowly but surely, you add Strasburg, you add Scherzer, you add, you know, key pieces via trades, via prospect, you find the Rendon, who shouldn't have been available to you in draft, you find Juan Soto with your scouting staff in the Dominican Republic that was basically non-existent when Major League Baseball was owning the Montreal Expos as they came to Washington, D.C. Where they've come from to get here to this point to have a chance to win a world championship is nothing short of remarkable.
Hey, you go around the horn and just how this roster was built this season. At catcher, both Kurt Suzuki and Yan Gomes were off-season acquisitions. Suzuki was acquired, and the Nationals decided first that they were going to go get Yan Gomes. He was traded for, and he was the starter. You and I thought, this is a guy that'll play 100 games. Well, then they realized that maybe we could split time here. We've got a value grab we could go get out of the bargain bin for $5 million in Kurt Suzuki. So they did that. They upgraded a position that's important. That was bad for them the last couple of years, and specifically with Matt Wieters, a real struggle offensively. It worked out. At first base, they knew that if Ryan Zimmerman was healthy, he and Matt Adams could give them a platoon. They didn't count on both of those guys being hurt at different points this year, but they've gotten production at first from Asdrubal Cabrera late season, Howie Kendrick along the way. At second, they signed Brian Dozier to a $9 million contract. They wanted power and above-average defense, and with a plus glove, that's exactly what he provides. Dozier was very good in stretches this season after a slow start. He's a traditionally slow starter, but during the stretch run, he went to have his first baby. He comes back, and the aforementioned is Asdrubal Cabrera, who drove in 40 runs in 38 games and taken over the position. At shortstop, Trey Turner, start to finish, was the guy. He got hurt, obviously, and missed over a month with a broken bone in his hand. First week of the season, hit by pitch at Nats Park against the Phillies. But at shortstop, without him, they really struggled. Wilmer Defoe and some of the other options like Adrian Sanchez they tapped into were dramatic downgrades. At third base, Anthony Rendon had a remarkable MVP-caliber season, a pending free agent. The year they've been waiting for and hoping for many years from Rendon finally came to fruition. You swing around the outfield, Danny. In left field, first full season for Juan Soto was a massive success. He was tremendous with 34 home runs and 120 batted in. In center field, Victor Robles came into his own exactly how they were hoping he would in his first full season, a dramatic upgrade over Michael Taylor, Denard Span, and some of the previous options to him, both offensively and defensively. And then in right, you weren't really sure after a month or so what you're going to get out of Adam Eaton, but Eaton kept getting healthier, kept playing better, and he gave you better defense than Bryce Harper did a year ago. You took that money you hadn't spent on him, and you spent on the pitching staff, which you can get into.
You basically find a way with those position players that you touched on, GP. It's either your prospect or you use your prospects to get the majority of those guys. That's pretty remarkable type stuff as to how this roster was built. Pitching staff, you know who the homegrown guys are, right? It's Steven Strasburg. That's the organizational, one of the turning points of this group. They went from also-ran to you saw what might be possible. That wonderful night against the Pittsburgh Pirates with 14 strikeouts. You saw his debut, and you knew one day you might have somebody that turns into this dominant postseason arm, winning meaningful games for a club with design of winning the World Series. That happened. You acquire Max Scherzer via free agency, a signing that some in the industry, frankly, you and I liked it, and not to toot our own horn here, it's easy to like a Cy Young Award winner coming over to the National League, but some people said, no, too much money. No, too many years for a guy that'll be in his mid to upper 30s by the time that contract is over. All he's done is live up to that contract and then some. He's worth twice as much, to be honest with you. Probably the best free agent signing, certainly in Nationals history, maybe in recent baseball memory, and maybe in all of sports. That's the level you're talking about. Patrick Corbin, the number three, a guy that cut his teeth in Arizona, had some ups and downs in his career, but the Nationals identified something in Patrick Corbin, and he lived up to the billing, certainly year one. Huge innings for this club, both in the regular season and in the postseason. Anibal Sanchez, meet the scouting eye combined with some of the new age analytics that they use. I think Rizzo told us a moment ago, what did he say? We're sneaky technical, was that the term that he used? And that fits very well when you think of Anibal Sanchez, a guy that had to reinvent himself at one point, came up as a hard thrower, fastball slider guy, turned himself into a pitch to contact pitcher with six or seven different looks, befuddling hitters with butterfly changeups and pitches in the 60s and the 70 miles an hour range. He has been incredible for this club after a terrible start, GP, to the season. Their fifth starter role, really in flux all season long. It's been a different cast of characters. Everybody has contributed, from Fetty to Voth to folks in between. And that's how you get a World Series. That's how you get to a championship level, is people that aren't supposed to do certain things do things that are above and beyond, things that you never really thought possible. That's how you get to the mid-90s, and that's how you get to that level of wins. That's how you get out of a division series and into an NLCS. Truly remarkable. 1 through 25, really 1 through 30, everybody's done something.
Danny Ruye and Grant Paulson on field level at Minute Maid Park, getting ready for game one of the World Series. You're listening to the Paul Henry's Window pregame show. Paul Henry's Windows, kind enough to help get us on the road, as well as our friends from PVI Office Furniture. Fast, excellent, affordable business grows with PVI. We'll be checking in with Pete Medhurst, who is on site at our watch party with the Junkies in just a few minutes. You can hear the Dews over top of the dugout as Sean Doolittle makes his way off of the field and into the clubhouse for his final prep before this game. They've just moved what they call the turtle away from the field now. The batting cage is gone. They're going to make the final preps on this field here at Minute Maid Park. We're approaching 6 o'clock local time and 7 back home, about 1 hour away from first pitch. You're listening to Grant and Danny's special pregame Minute Maid Park in Houston.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.